This might be a dire occasion. I'm down to my last Mountain Dew.
The Sunday Skypers. Burning Beards.
Where were we last time?
Well, okay. Go ahead.
I say, getting my face removed, I believe.
No, we had just... Well, okay, you're getting your face removed. See, but the Triumphant Dwarves had defeated the foes of Mother and her children.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
And set fire to the Opal Brewery.
My plan is to sort of move forward a bit, a slight bit in time, but I would like to, like, resolve the infirmary scene a little first, because I don't think we left it on a horrible, terrible cliffhanger, but there were still things to be done, I think.
I think Scully was still possessed.
Yes, among other things. So I'd like to resolve that, and then we can like consider like how we want to rewrite or figure our beliefs, and then we're going to go in half a day or a day later and take it from there.
And where am I? Or where is
that is an adventure which we are going to get into, and
someplace safe, both boy.
Oh, I doubt somewhere that. This is Will.
The first portion of the session may not feature Slate very much, but there might be a lot more in the second portion. All right. So then, last we left Flint was getting up, I guess, from his where he was wrestled down, and
I flung some of my blood at Scully.
I thought you flung a chamber pot.
I did that too.
So you did both. Okay. So I think the last thing that happened was that Stone Bones had wrestled Scully's possessed body to the ground and had locked him down, and he was kind of in a frenzy, and the sorcerer's fire had begun to go out, and Bruna was still in her cot with her unloaded arbalest pointed at the wrestlers in a sort of nervous failed steel test kind of way.
Yeah. We think it's unloaded. It might have a scalpel or something in it.
It's not even drawn. You can see it's not loaded.
Oh.
So, you know, you're in the infirmary. The fire is sort of dying down. There's still a curl of sorcerous bluish sort of smoke roiling about the ceiling and pouring out of the open entrance. Stone Bones is on top of Scully, and he reaches for the axe that Scully dropped, your axe, and he grabs it and he lifts it over his head in this sort of mad-eyed, murderous, you know, about to do something very terrible to Scully. What do you do?
I let him.
All right.
I'm just trying to think. I'm sitting here profusely bleeding from the face, and the only person that can help me has my axe.
Okay, so no, you know, you don't... You well, know.
Okay, is there any sign that Scully's coming back, or have we lost him?
Oh, that's probably a key bit of information. You could see Scully losing, or, you know, the spirit possessing Scully, losing oomph, like he kind of collapsed under Stone Bones. At present, Scully doesn't appear to be a threat. As he sort of slumped down under Stone Bones, the fire kind of started to go out, and the whole sorcerous threat seems to be going away, but Stone Bones is still in sort of crazy, yes, you know, mode.
In that case, we'll shout out, the spirit has fled, no need for his head, and grab for my axe.
Okay. I don't know, do you want to use intimidation, command, or fork in poetry-wise?
Yeah, I think it's intimidation with a little bit of command. Do you get bonus points for being a bleeding, horrible wreck?
I don't know. Not in this situation.
But he's a doctor.
He's not. He's not focused on you.
Ah.
Do you have anything else interesting that you might use? Okay.
Oddly likable.
Well, you're not trying to be likable, are you?
Well, people just don't understand that when I'm intimidating, that's when I'm being likable, because I'm trying to get things done without people getting murdered.
You have conspicuous if you want to be loud and obvious, and if you want to
and bloody.
You
know, hey, yeah, we can go with that.
Yeah, yeah. Intimidation, maybe with a command and conspicuous. Double fork.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Fork them from the left, fork them from the right.
All right, so the obstacle, I think, is 4. I'm not going to lower it because he's kind of in the middle of his, you know, mode. So if you succeed, you know, you succeed in stopping him from doing whatever he's doing, and he's going to sort of snap back to his senses.
You know, I've got a B4 intimidation. If we throw in a little command and conspicuous, and we throw in...
How many do you have?
I have 3 persona. I'm trying to think right. How many I want. How much do I value Scully? You know, actually, it wasn't his fault that he sit there and split my face in twain. Because I am such a sweetheart, we're going to spend 2 persona on that.
Oh, wow, okay. Oh, this is juicy, okay.
So that brings me up to 8 dice with an obstacle 4. Fantastic. So
50, yeah. Ish.
Ish. Ish. Yeah. So is that routine?
Let's see. 6, 4, yes.
So 8d6. Survey says...
Oh, wow.
Why? 4 ones.
Do you have any colon trait or any... You don't have a deeds, do you? No.
No. Man, dice roller. Does not like me. I'm wondering if it's rolling D5s or something. Oh, well.
Maybe. You may be not so hot on this. Okay, so...
I guess he's used to the sight of blood. So, take a number!
Stone Bones is way too in his protect the patients, protect everyone in here, crazy sorcerous shenanigans happening, have to stop mode. You cry out to him, maybe, you know, raise a hand or something. But you just don't reach him, and he just starts to hack Scully's head into pieces, you know, as he's just shouting wordlessly. It's horrible to behold. It's just awful.
He's our doctor?
Yes.
Do you let him finish, or are you just sitting or standing there in horror?
Well, it is Scully definitely on the dead side?
By the second axe whack, yes. There was no coming back from that unless, you know, you were some kind of miracle worker. If there was some kind of magic or priest resurrection spell, right?
If we had a rod of infinite resurrection, it wouldn't be a problem.
I get that at least. I'll just sit down and shake my head, dripping blood. Doc, he's dead. Tend to the living.
He's just panting, he's sweating, his like beard is all, you know, on end, his hair is like he usually...
I measured his blood splattered a little bit, too.
Yeah, absolutely, but his hair is usually like pulled back, so it's not in the way of things, but it's sort of come out of the leather thong, and sort of these thick, dwarfy curls are just all over the place, and in a mess, and of course, he's just bloody, and then he... sits back and sees what he's done, and there's this sort of intake of breath, like, and then he drops the axe and it clangs on the floor. He looks to you briefly, but then it's as if he's not seeing you. It's as if, like, he just happened to look in your direction when he's remembering something. And then he sort of whips about and just rushes over to Bruna and sort of grabs her hand. He's like, child, are you all right? Are you unburned? You know, she realizes that she doesn't have an arrow or a bolt in her arbalest, so you know, she just lets that drop and sort of grabs him, and by sort of she grabs the fabric of one of his sleeves. It's like she's trying to find a way to express what she's going through or like what's happening, and you know, all the while Stomos is like patting her face and brushing her hair away, and you know, just making sure that she's not, you know, hurt or burned or something. There's a little more than just doctor patient fervor here. Like, okay, he was just in a crazy situation, but Flint, you get the sense that there's maybe a little more here than what's like expected. Bruna just snaps to you and sees that you're just sitting there with, you know, half your face in it's a big slash, and you know, yeah, your one ear is essentially dangling from a strip of flesh. And she just points to you and goes, "Stormos, Flint is bleeding. You have to help him." You know, he realizes that, you know, so he gets up and rushes over to you and has this ugly grimace on his face. "Oh, not good. Not good at all."
"Get your tools, surgeon." Flint will actually get up, walk over, pick up his axe and wipe the blood off of it. And then
on what?
Probably Scully's body. And he will talk to the axe. "You've had too much blood today. You need the rest." And then, you know, we'll stow the axe and we'll find ourselves a stool to sit on.
Yeah, okay. So I think,
you know, we got one last thing to say.
Okay.
One more shout out. "Wolf cow, I need a bear."
Oh, that's perfect, because you're a little out of your head, because Ulfkel at this point is off burning spiders somewhere. Beautiful, great, okay. And, you know, Scully rushes
back. It's been a rough day.
He's going to treat your wound so it stabilizes. And I think you took a midi wound, yeah?
It was a nasty one, yes.
Yeah.
It required immediate surgical attention, I believe was the term.
Well, it required tending to really in the last session, but since we weren't really done with the scene, I figured let's not be that bad. Let's not be that, you know, rules of lawyery.
Let's not be that DM.
Yes, let's not be that DM. Well, technically,
we'll be able to stitch it back on.
Oh, yeah. He stitches the ear together as best he can. It's not going to be pretty, but you're still going to have your ear.
Yay.
You're going to have a characterizing scar, which is going to be really raw for the next, like, week. So I guess you'll be in, a head bandage or something. Here we go.
So on your character sheet, where would you put things like interesting scars? Is that actually something like a trait?
We're coming up toward a trait vote very soon. In which case, you're going to get something like a character trait like that. Absolutely. If you think it's cool, then you know, we could always consider it, like, you know, big scarred face or something.
Unless he's a miracle worker, it's not going to go away.
Nope.
"I just have this surgical glue and butterfly stitches for you." It's like, that doesn't sound like him.
No, you'd have to go to the treaty elves to get it treated properly.
I would like you to make an obstacle 3 health test to recover from the initial, after the initial treatment that he gives you.
Well, we should probably save that last. Not
I would
that
do that if I were
me.
You, yes.
Okay.
But you should have like 6 or...
Oh yeah, B6.
Yeah, okay.
This is 50-50 odds means nothing to me.
One success.
And 3 twos. Oh, okay. I'm going to have to go to another dice server. Maybe one that I can hack. So it says, if you are Flint, add +1 to all rolls.
All right. So it's really bad, and it's in your face. So every time you emote or do something, you know, it pulls at the stitches, and it's horrible. And maybe it's like Stomos can't quite get at the infection effectively enough, so it's kind of pussy and swollen for the first few days. So you're still at -2 dice at present. As soon as you have a chance to let the pus drain, you're going to be at -1 for the next week and a half, maybe.
But I'll go for the sympathy vote then. So if we're going to do this, I might as well have a cot next to Bruna. We can play checkers or something.
Well, it's not that bad. It's just, it annoys you and it's painful, right? You can probably stay in bed for...
It's a constant reminder and a head-splitting headache, but...
Well, I'm sure you can get something to chew on for that. But of course, chewing is painful.
Yes.
And Aristophe, he comes over it and lances it so you bleed the pus off. So.
Oh, yes.
This is where the beer comes in.
So with that resolved, I thought we're going to move ahead like a day. So we can refine our beliefs if we want to. So let's go over what we have and see if there's something, you know, important that you want to do.
I really haven't reopened the brewery, so I've just simply got in a position where I have to clean them out.
Smoked. Just a little.
So maybe the present step one is restore the breweries or something?
You know, Ash is a good one right there. Yeah, I will restore the brewery, restore the Opal Brewery of Scoria Deep. How's that? But it's not going to be called Opal. It's going to be called Spider's Bane.
Okay.
You can use fire opals for the eyes.
Yeah, if you got that much money, lad, go right ahead and buy some.
I guess you're going to have to sift through the debris to figure out a way to recover the lost Nog recipes.
You know, that'll be a trick and a half. And then I get the placeholder one.
Well, that's where slabs of stone come in to save you. Seems to be all the rage here in Scoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as soon as we get back and I found out what happened, the first thing Ufko's going to say is, okay, what happened to the demon? Because you didn't kill the demon.
we'll get to that.
I have an open placeholder one. Make sure the demon's gone from Scoria Deep.
Sure. By demon, do you mean mother?
No, no. The thing that possessed Scully. We have a history.
Oh, okay.
Make sure the fire elf demon. There we go. Fire elf demon.
Well, protect Bruna and Stonebones from the burning spirit. Yeah. Didn't quite happen.
Well, I think we resolved that last time. I think I gave you a persona for that. So you have. Probably. So that needs to be something else. You could leave it open and see what happens and write a new one. Or if there's something that absolutely leaps out at you.
Yeah.
Have we sent word back that we've got the Scoria?
Yes. They may not be there yet. So yeah. Probably a week's journey.
It only took us 3 years, but you know.
It took you a little over 2 weeks, but they're not an expedition, so
yeah.
Travel a little faster.
Yeah, all those brewing wanes. Go slow.
This tunnel is too narrow. We'll have to broaden it. All right. The prince's beliefs are perfectly reasonable for the present. There may be things happening that may, you know, give you an opportunity to change things around or refine them, which is good. Do we still have a slate, or are you off drinking coffee?
I'm here.
Okay. There's the belief at the bottom. I want to find out about the Goodheart family. You wanted to get information out of the Breccia dwarves?
Yeah.
So it was possible that they maybe they buggered off to Breccia, the rest of your family. So that would be something to amend, maybe, like add a line to that, like ask the Breccia dwarves for help or I don't know, phrase it however you would like, right? Maybe you want to pump them for information or steal information. I don't know how you would prefer to do it. That seems to be like the guiding belief, at least for the present. And if something comes up, maybe you would like to amend something else. So it's maybe a day later, after the whole kerfuffle in the breweries and the madness in the infirmary, or vice versa, or both, we open up on a hall, like a more cramped hall, out in somewhere in Scoria. We know this because it's crowded with various like serpent people men, and a group of them are sitting around like this fire. They're taking like some kind of meal, a meager meal. They're having some kind of discussion over their food. And one of them, who's completely shaven-headed, like Rom was, but he doesn't have the same markings, the same like paint. He's saying to the rest, "I don't know about this holiness of I don't know about the holiness of these dwarves. You can tell the serpent is not happy with them. Think of the fire in the infirmary. There was no source for it." And another guy, like across from him, stands up, but it's not in a like violent way. It's more measured, and he points to him and says, "You're a fool. You were not there when the war engine spoke with the serpent's voice. These dwarves know what they are doing, and I'm sure that they are the serpent's chosen, same as we are, just different." The first one growls that dwarves slew the prophet on his seat. The making of some fiery toy is no recompense for that. And, you know, there's a bit of grunting around the fire as the others agree. And as he's saying that, this, like, water-fetching girl interrupts. Like, she's maybe a little younger. She's carrying, like, an earthen amphora or something, like a vessel with water. She says, "You are all deaf and blind in the snake's belly. The great lady is our prophet now, and just as Rom himself willed it. It's her voice we must follow, and she says, we will bury Rom and leave. The guy who's standing, who has like kind of long hair in a weird bun, he makes the sign at her, kind of like a peace sign, but with the fingers curled, so it kind of looks like claws. And he sort of marks her with it and says, it is not a woman's place to speak for the serpent. The rest of the warriors around the fire kind of mimic his sort of sign at her, at which like she rolls her eyes. But the first, the guy who's bald, he says, it's not a dwarf's place either. And believe the serpent will rise in anger and cast the unworthy from his sight. And when he said that, there's just silence from the others, and they look at each other in this sort of unsure. They're fanatics in a sense, but at the same time, the idea of the serpent rising or appearing is kind of a scary thing for all of them, obviously. The girl at this point just snorts in disgust and turns around and leaves. The last thing we see is sort of this close-up of the fire. We sort of go toward the fire, and one of the coals splits open. None present see this, just we. And when the coal splits open, the inside reveals the face of a dragon.
Bum, bum, bum.
So we cut away from that, and we open up on you know, Fandral's council table in the hall you've appropriated, the old like clan hall for you. We have Fandral there, Flint is there, Ulfkill is there, Roar is there, Sigibert is there with a bunch of books and charts and notes. And anyone else you can think of that you would like to have present for a debriefing. This is like the scene where we're all telling the prince, like, okay, this is what's been going on in the last day. If there's anyone you can think of that you would like to be there besides these people.
Well,
so now
all the brewers are there.
Would they be invited? Are they like on council table privileges?
They're part of the guild.
This isn't the brewers guild meeting.
No, no.
All right. Okay.
So you're kind of the head brewer. That's why you're here. But yeah.
It's a cabinet session. Okay. I think we should have stone bones here because, you know, it's always good to put the GM on the spot.
Well, I tried to. Who of the brewers actually can write? It's not me.
I'm sure someone does.
I'll just make Bear because she seems to be the most put together person of the bunch.
So she's like there as your writer or advisor or something?
Secretary.
Secretary, okay.
so we can keep notes of things, you know. And...
Right, she keeps your secrets. That's the kind of secretary she is.
Yeah. Someone's got to write down the recipes as we find them.
Yeah, Slate is conspicuously absent. So Sigibert begins to speak first. Like he says, the great beer and the pyre for Lord Rom, the late Lord Rom, it's finished. And the preparations have begun. The burning is in progress, and I believe once that is done, the lady will rally her people, and they will leave Scoria as agreed. And he sort of flips through like some sheets of paper, like notes and other bits, just to make sure that he's not forgetting something. Realizes that, well, that was all, and then he sort of draws himself up and, you know, composes himself and nods to Fandral as if like that was my report.
That sounds good. The sooner they're gone, the better.
Roar gives a grunt of agreement.
Now, do any of them are they all going to leave, or are they all members of this fire cult? Do we know?
I presume that's old Kellyan character.
Yeah, he's just wondering.
They all seem to be believers in the same religious structure there, so we'll encourage any hangers-on to leave with the rest.
Sigibert looks at you as if, like if you'll permit. Like, he doesn't say it, but he has that soliciting look, right?
Yes.
Oh, if you'll permit... I have spoken at length with Lady Villari, and as with any greater cult or culture, there will always be people who don't always disagree, but they seem to have a very strict sense of hierarchy and who does what. I would not be terribly concerned with a few staying, or if there were a few staying, I believe they would be very few enough that any small retinue of dwarves could kick them out, as the princess.
Well, let's not be too hasty with kicking them out. They do have connections on the surface, and there's still supplies that we need here before Scoria is self-sufficient. So maintaining traffic with the humans might be distasteful, but might be productive for us as well.
We'll evaluate that when the time comes.
Drinking our water, says Roar. They're eating our food. They dwell in our halls. That's not right.
I mean, if they wish to stay here, then maybe they should make themselves a little village near the entrance. And then there they
I'm sorry, the human ghetto.
We'll deal with that issue if it comes up.
Oh, let me top that one off for you there, Flint.
Okay, Flint's standing there with his face bandaged.
We got to make sure the bandages don't cover the mouth, though. If we can't drink beer and we can't talk, what good are we?
It's sort of down the side of your face and over one eye and all that.
I have to have somebody invent the dwarven straw.
We'd make it out of lead and we roll it up and make your extra sweet.
So Roar looks to Flint and Stonebones. He slams his fist on the table. Now I want you to tell me what happened to Scully. I hear you hacked him to pieces in your infirmary. Why is that? Stonebones looks very uncomfortable.
It was a terrible situation. Scully was taken by the fire spirit that...
I knew it!
Yes.
You kill it!
At this moment, I think Bear is sort of looking at crazy Ulfkel, kind of like, oh dear, oh my. Yes.
We drove it away. How does one kill it except by excising the host?
My liege, it's somewhere in here. It's looking for another victim. We have to find it and do something with it.
It probably went back to its old haunts. Just cordon off that forsaken brewery.
Why would it go to new haunts when it had a room full of new victims?
It's a spirit. It's like a ghost, right? It's bound to where it died or whatever. It's not creeping around looking for a new host.
Does anyone here have vengeful spirits wise?
No.
If anyone does, I'm the closest.
I think someone's learning it. Should have something in that tune, I think.
Oh, I do. Actually, I do have vengeful spirit wise.
Would you like to make a...
Sure.
Make your opinion known. What does Ulfkel suspect has happened?
That, like it did last time, it fled its victim and it's now probably inhabiting another body or another item. It was possessing the cup, I think, and then they left the cup into Scully, and now it's into wherever the. For all we know, it's in
the chamber pot.
Chamber pot, yeah, it could be, or Flint's axe. Could be in Flint's axe, for all we know.
Yes.
John, hate you. Really, I do.
What am I rolling against? Is it a routine?
Okay, so I think you're rolling against torture player.
Yeah. In order to make a declaration about how the spirit operates, I think that's a very simple, basic, one of the few things you learn earliest. But besides, these are the popular urban myths or popular stories about.
So one or two?
I'd say one, which is double to two, and it's
going six out.
It's your perception, right?
I made it.
You made it, just barely. Wow. Everyone's rolling so many ones. In that case, yeah, I'd say Ulfkel is able to give a convincing account, not only of how the spirit would move, but you might be able to give an example from a different story.
And also from my experience of it moving from
your experience,
but
could also draw upon, oh, I remember this story, by the way, over there. And you know, that had that spirit that jumped from this to that much horror was, happening.
This spirit doesn't need a living body. It just needs a receptacle. Something appropriate. I'm looking at Flint's axe.
I'm going to write.
Yeah. it doesn't have to be a person. He keeps looking at Flint's axe. We need a priest. We should send for a priest.
I thought Ulfkel was our priest.
But by the by, yes, this is something I wanted to bring up. The dwarves, generally speaking, by the life paths, don't have holy people. The holiest people they have are craftsmen or brewers or you're kind of, instead of having a church you go to sort of commune with the divine, you achieve the divine by your crafts, right? So, which is why you have such a like great appreciation for craftsmanship and the perfect beer. That is like God to you.
I'm an augur, so yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah, I am the local priest.
Yes, you could say that.
So we need a blacksmith to exercise the axe?
Yeah, we got to determine if it's possessed or not, my lord.
And how do we do that?
I have to research it. I'm not quite sure. If Paul was here, he'd know what to do.
That's a good point. You might want to call from Paul.
Who's your swiftest runner? And he's looking at Flint.
Well, right now Flint is looking kind of hurt.
His swiftest runners are already heading towards. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see what comes back.
Moral about now. Yeah.
Speaking of scouts, says Roar, no offense to you, Ulfkel. I'm sure the spirit thing is very, very dangerous and important. He doesn't really care. He turns to Fanlon and says, the scouts we sent north to scout the Scoria dwarves have not returned, and it is not like them, as Flint will attest. Usually report in at least once every day and a half if they are ranging far or near, whatever. Yeah. I'm concerned about this. This could mean that they have either been captured or that they are dead or something.
That's important. We'll have to investigate with a little more force.
Aye, that is what I'm thinking. And he thumbs his axe in his belt. Well, once we get these human scum out of Scoria, of course.
I'm not going to be helpful evicting humans at this time. I'll see about putting a party together to look for our scouts.
Okay. Stomos, by the way, beside you is like, even you in your like half blind hurt state can tell that he's like, he would rather be somewhere else.
Stone bones.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like you look anxious. How are the rest of your charges doing?
Well, none were burned too severely by the fire. And he's like, he's not really looking either Roar or Fandral in the eye. He's sort of just lifting his gaze enough to like indicate them or with nods.
What about dear Bruna? When will she be back on her feet?
Sure, it will be soon. But I don't think that's any subject that is necessary to bring up at this kind of meeting.
Well, we are talking about scouts, and I'm down one.
Well, she won't be able to help you anytime, not right away. Her leg is still broken.
Ah, stone takes time to mend.
Aye, it does. It does.
Ooh, yes. Speaking of our beloveds, my liege, I wish to send a word to my betrothed, Berglin, the smithy. She would make a fine addition to our troop here with her apprentices. She could reopen one of the smithies and get to work at arming us with proper weapons again.
Well, that sounds fine with me. We're
we have weapons, Isroar. What we need is bodies.
She'll be bringing her smiths with her, and you don't know them. They're all, you know, a yard across and a yard thick.
He crosses his arms over his chest. They're also very thick.
I expect in my letter to Freya after our success here, they will be able to send more support to us.
an eye from Ulfkel. Okay. Sigibert pipes up and goes, like he nods to Ulfkel and says, Master Nogger Ulfkel, is there anything I should take into account in the accounts needs for your brewery project? Anything I should know before sending more runners to tomorrow?
Eggs?
He looks really like surprised. Like, what, eggs? Is that what you need?
We have to make the Nog of Beginnings to inaugurate our reopening of Scoria. And I need eggs. Lots of them. A gross.
It might be easier to transport the chickens.
Well, however you get them here, I need a gross of eggs.
A week on the road, I don't think those would be fresh eggs.
Aye. So chickens makes a good idea. Perhaps we could go and see if there are any wild ones out there. It doesn't have to be chickens. It could be, you know, any egg.
Sigibert, well, meanwhile, it's scratching furiously among his notes.
What is the season outside? Was it summer, spring?
Stone.
Stone.
You know, I forget, but...
We were harvesting.
Oh, yeah, it was harvesting.
There would be no bird's eggs then. Okay. So we would need chickens.
Perhaps you can ask among the humans. Maybe they have chickens. I don't know.
Oh, certainly. You'd parley with them. Good luck with that.
He has a bit of cachet with him now after being the fire wielder.
And I pet my little pony keg. And I have something to trade with, too. So we'll see what we can do.
I don't know. Did I explain that? Did I convey that via Bregor, maybe?
Yeah, they don't seem like...
They're not the drinking kind.
Oh, that's right.
They're not trustworthy, according to Ulf Keller.
That's right. Yes, they didn't drink. They're teetotalers.
Use your reputation as the dragon maker or something.
Actually, do I have a reputation of dragon maker?
Maybe you should. We'll see when we get to the trade vote. So Sigebert looks up, he finishes his scrawling, and he says, anything else? Building materials?
We can do that ourselves. Once we make to the entrance, we can head out to the forest and cut down trees and then maybe look for wild barley.
Wouldn't it be faster to just send for all of it via regolith? He just looks to Fandral and then to you. And
I look at Bear and she sort of shrugs and says,
Totally. That was what I was going to say. Like, she shrugs.
Yeah. It was harvest, so do you think they have any spare barley?
Well, we do stockpile, she says.
It's just like if she wants to sit there and grease the wheels among her own people, of course they can be the breadbasket for Regolith and Scoria.
They probably are the breadbasket for Marl, at least, right? Themselves and Marl. So it would just, you'd have to call in greater quantities. You could possibly do it. Yeah, I mean, she's like, yeah, it's not impossible.
You write a note to whoever is in charge. And you understand, Ulfkill, even though he buys from them all the time, he doesn't actually know who they are. They're just the Marl, just the Regolith farmers.
It's the Regolith co-op. So there's a loud sort of banging at the doors out in the hall. And one of the axe bearers on duty, you know, looks to Fandral and then heads off to answer it. Says Sigebert, I think that's it then, unless someone else has something they need to bring up.
Is there anything unusual? We've heard tales about this witch. Flint's going a bit insane. Is there many other unusual occurrences such as this?
Roar grunts something about the burning in the infirmary and looks angrily at Stonebones.
Yes, that's another example.
The singing witch who is singing from beneath us someplace.
No offense, says Roar, but that good heart dwarf can be... He could just as well be crazy.
Possibly, but if there's something real behind his craziness, it'd be better to know about it.
Fair enough.
You know, it may not be a witch, but there may be something.
Speaking of the good hearts, he's looking around. Where's Slate?
As you say that, the axe bearer comes back, and he has Bregor in tow. And, you know, Bregor kind of gangly and all that next to all of you, but he does his best to sort of incline his head to all of you. And he says, he says the wrong thing. He's like, Prince Fandral, the... promised retinue of Breccia dwarves are at the gates. Shall I send for them?
Yes, it's time we had a talk with them, yes.
All right. Shall I send them here, or would you prefer a different meeting place?
I'll meet them in the throne room.
Yes, of course. He meets Roar's smoldering, unappreciating glare and then sort of just nods to himself a couple of times and then he heads off.
Flint, maybe you should go with him in case there needs any dwarven-human translation going on.
Sir. Allow me, says Sigebert, and you know, poor Flint is so, yes.
Indeed. He's bloody wounded, is what he is.
He was trying to be delicate, but trust Ulfkill not to be.
Perhaps both of you.
Is that agreeable, Prince?
Certainly.
Both
of you go.
Well, I'm all right then.
The prince has spoken. And I want to see these Breccia dwarves firsthand.
All right. You hobble off and catch up to Bregor while I guess the others or whoever you now want with you in the throne room sort of shuffle off there.
Probably my brace of X-Bear is laying in the hall just for show.
Let's cut to like the gates. Flint is standing there with Sigebert and Bregor, and Bregor is adjusting his mail harness and his trousers and all that, and attempting to be vaguely formal looking. Sigebert is just kind of in his element, right? Because he's used to dealing with nobility and envoys and all that. A calm, diminutive dwarf, not very tough looking, but clearly like, yep, I got this. What's Flint's general demeanor and appearance?
Probably a little bit grimmer than his usual likable and chuffing self. He'll bring the gruffness and the intimidation.
All right. Let me scratching his bandage.
Or fingering his axe.
Yeah, all right.
The one with the burning blue flame. Hey! No. I do have a question for these Brekkia doors before we get assembled and head out. One of our healers may have come through here.
They're not here yet.
Oh.
So
I'm sorry.
You have.
Jumping of the gun.
Yeah. I think the gate cracks open and a pair of human watchmen walk through and, nod to you, you three. Mm. And they begin to open the gate, that side of the gate, because it's big enough to allow very broad amount of people or wagons. So it's enough with the one gate, and it's ponderously swinging open as they're pushing it, because they don't know that you use a mechanism for it, but whatever. It works.
Lovely dwarven architecture.
Yes. Beyond that portal, beyond that gate half, you can see maybe 40 dwarves. They're decked out in cloaks and fur-trimmed cloaks. They have pretty exquisite armor, but it's sort of an odd-looking armor. If Ulfkel were here, he would be able to say, "Oh, right, I remember that." And from when they came to camp, it kind of looks like a combination of mail and lacquered wood, very polished. They appear to have axes and all that. It's foreign enough to be a little weird, but it's familiar enough to be obviously, they're dwarf. It's the dwarven way of doing that or that, or clearly, designed after their locality, based on what they have, the resources. They begin to file in at the head of this 40 dwarf throng. Is a slightly bent, very old-looking dwarf. His hair is long and gray. He has this great long beard. He looks more like a cross between Gimli and Gandalf than he does a super armored D&D dwarf. One of his eyes is sort of half shut, and he has a bright gleam in the other one as he's sort of surveying everything. And he walks forward with a cane, a gnarly cane. He spots you three, and of course Sigebert steps forward and makes a necessary obeisance, however you dwarves do it. That's interesting, actually. How would you dwarves do it? Well, what's the customary dwarf-like greeting when you meet dignitaries?
I still imagine that it's handshakes, because you cannot have an axe in your hand.
Oh, that's true. Maybe the whole, you grip the wrist, and then you grip each other's upper arms as well?
Checking for weapons in the sleeves, yeah.
The leader dwarf, he shifts his cane to the other hand and then extends his arm to Sigebert, who does the secret dwarven handshake.
Yes. it's a secret to non-dwarves.
Yes. They both give each other a sort of grunt of accord, and Sigebert says, "Prince Fandral." What's the term, holder of the Dragon Throne of Scoria, Prince of Marl, and all that stuff, fancy titles, await you in the throne room. I ask you, please, to excuse its current condition. It is an unfortunate result of the previous tenant. The dwarf nods sagely, and he says, that is no concern. We understand. Mind the blood. Mind the cracks in the sulfuric, volcanic-looking, horrible pits.
We've been working on that.
Yeah, we've been working on that. They're probably bridged over, and some of them are patched, but it's still not up to its former glory. It's only been a few days. So he nods, and he says,
I am Seneschal Gurm. And I represent, of course, the Princess Fenna of Brekkia and, other holdings.
When he says that, he's waving his cane about as if to, indicate that there are plenty more somewhere.
Please do show us forth to this prince of the south forthwith.
And Sigibert's like looking over his shoulder around the dwarves, like, am I to understand your princess is among you? And Gurm nods and says, yes, incognito, you never know about these humans, what they might do if they knew there was a princess among our number. Sigibert's like, all right. May I present to you the he's not sure how to address or how to, like, present Flint, so he's like, just...
I give him that...
Princess aid!
I'll smile as best I can. Excuse the bandages. Rough day. Shake his hand, says, sir, I am the scout captain for the prince.
Aye. And you go by what name?
I am Flint of the Goddardams.
There's a small moment where you can swear there's a hint of surprise in his eyes, but then he sort of goes back to peering superbity and smugness, and not superbity and smugness really, but
if he's got a sharp eye, he'll notice I have a Goddardam ring on each hand.
On each hand.
Yes, because I have two of them.
They're not identical.
Yes.
One is this old clan ring, right? And the other is the signet, the ring you found in the other brewery. Yes. I think that's an excellent point. I think when you say that, there's a brief hint of surprise, and then he sort of looks down and sees your fist.
That's also part of the handshake.
Yeah.
It's as you check out each other's bling.
Oh, right. Okay. He has... like bling of his own, but you don't immediately recognize any of the symbols.
Clan wife. Use your clan wife.
says we're not going to sit there and ponder it and lick the ring to see what it's made of. So, it is something to note in case I see that symbol again, or if I need to forge a copy. A scout's got to think of these things.
You need to forge a call. Oh, well, okay, fair enough. You don't know them. All right, so he, nods head and
you lead the way.
As a scout always does. I will literally lead the way, and I will let Sigibert walk parallel with or in line with our dignitaries.
Yes, the dignitaries. Okay.
And he can do the political platitudes and say, and here we're going to install a new set of apartments, and over here we're working on a brewery, and hey, have you heard about that spider burning party we had?
I think Sigibert is kind of tight-lipped. He's more like excusing the humans being there and sort of the crowding and the present look of it and all that. But
it's a fixer-upper.
Yeah, be sure it will be returned to its former glory. But yeah, he's not super open or revealing anything.
Okay, see, that's a difference between having the lucky and lighthearted Flint. I use luck.
Or Ulfkel, he would like be, oh, you should see our breweries. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be the same.
Okay, and we'll dutifully lead them up. 40 to see the prince all at once does seem a little extreme. I'm assuming that most of the party is going to stay at the foot of the hall.
Do you bring this up when you get to the steps?
I will mention it because, hey, I guess I'm in charge of security now.
Sigibert nods to you and he looks to Gurm, and Gurm shrugs knowingly, and he sort of waves his cane, and 30 of them sort of set up shop.
Now that there's only 10,
oh, yeah.
Is there one that obviously stands out as a princess type?
There's one of them that look a bit bulkier.
With
a deep hood over their head.
Well, Flint's an idiot. he'll walk over and look her up and down. Says, do you wish to be announced?
The figure turns to you, and you see like the hint of a very well sculpted, impeccable dwarf woman's chin under the drawn down hood. Mm-hmm. And maybe a gleam of something underneath, but that's when Gurm like takes your shoulder and like turns you around. It's like, well, let's not dispense with the etiquette just like that. Let's get on with it. We have important people to see.
It is my duty to make announcements upon entrance into the hall.
You have been told who is coming. Now, young dwarf.
This is true. So be it.
You could combat him if you really wanted to, but I mean,
it depends on how much I like losing.
Be a lot easier to hit those difficult and challenging tests now that you're down a couple of dice.
I think what we're going to do, how we're going to do this is, with a party of 10. Okay, what is Gurm's title again? Chance?
Seneschal.
At the foot of the hall, when we go inside, Flint will take his axe and pound the butt. I don't know if we do it against the floor as tradition, or if we have a place for pounding and announcing.
But
then he'll just shout up because of the wonderful dwarven acoustics.
Oh, yeah.
Seneschal Gurm and dignitaries!
Seabird is like leaning over to you like, Princess Fennel Breccia.
And Princess Fennel of Breccia.
Okay, I don't know. Did you mean to get that wrong, or was I just...
I probably got it wrong accidentally. He meant to get it right.
All right, okay. So you get it right.
What did you say again?
Fenna. F-E-N-N-A. F-E-N-N-A. F-E-N-A.
Okay. And I was thinking of herbs and spices.
Oh, Fenna. Okay. Like henna, except with an F. And at that moment, you know, the nine dwarf axe bearers apparently remaining take off their helmets and they hold them under an arm and, you know, take a position behind and around. And Gurm steps forth but waits. The guy at the back comes over to the figure in the middle and, you know, takes off the whole, like, outer cloak. And underneath this cloak, we see blinding for a moment in the this throne room, maybe a bit cracked and all that, but it's still reflecting light from outside around the room with its various like mirror polished stone walls and all that. So that light reflects blindingly in this dwarven mail that's been, it's been reinforced like the other dwarves with wood, but this lacquer is like a kind of rainbow oily mother of pearl type lacquer. And it's set with jewels, and like underneath the outer cloak, she has on this undercloak, right? That's like fur trimmed around like a big, exquisite fur trimmed collar. And her face is like previously adverted to, right? Just this impeccable dwarven princess's face. It's strong, it's broad, it's also delicate in the right way. Her hair is just voluminous and full and oiled and combed and braided in these two thick braids going down the sides of her shoulders. It's like unveiling a treasure, like unveiling the most precious treasure you've ever seen.
So are you saying I need to make a greed roll?
Do you have beauty as a...
Actually, I do.
Who else is present in here that has beauty? Like, is Ulfkel here or...
I'm probably here.
Yeah.
But no, craftsmanship is mine.
All right.
If anything, he sit there and realize, okay, at least two handmaidens were working on that hairdo of hers.
See, does Fandral have beauty?
I take that back. I do have beauty.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's Fandral that doesn't care about... No, you care about power and not craftsmanship. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
She is a stunner in every possible way. Oh, I should mention, like, she has an axe, but... It's a slightly smaller axe. It's more like a handy dandy, like, it's not the big, crazy, split up goblin heads axe. It's slightly smaller and more flexible.
It's a hand axe.
Ceremonial.
Kind of hand axe, yeah. Not tomahawk kind of hand axe, but, you know, in that middling range.
Ceremonial axe.
Yeah. Well, let's do the greed thing first.
Ready for failure.
I can't wait for like a three-way I must have it here.
What's our obstacle? Just our hesitation?
The obstacle is your hesitation, yes.
Or our greed.
So I got five versus five.
Or your greed exponent if that is higher.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Okay. So my hesitation is five, my greed's five. So wherever it is, it's five.
I get a bonus die because I'm engaged.
No.
Same here.
You're a dwarf. Greed exists as a counterpoint to the very organized and hierarchical dwarven society, right? It's the playing a dwarf is sort of going between your oaths and your strict society and the greed that just wants to pull you down into the abyss. Mm-hmm. So
this is why I have a greed of B4. I'm the least influenced by that.
Probably. It's a steel test, and you roll against either your hesitation or your greed exponent if that is higher. And in Flint's case, it is not. Your hesitation is 5, so that's higher.
What does it count if I make it? What does it count as if I fail it? Is it different?
It counts as just having to make it is a routine greed test. The steel test is like any other steel test. You know, you compare it to the dice.
Even if I fail it, it's still just a routine greed test.
Yes, yes.
Now, is this open-ended or is...
Steel is open-ended by default.
All right, so I reroll that 6. No, I fail by 2 points.
You can also spend a fate to reroll a traitor if you wish, because it's open-ended by default.
Sure, I'll spend a fate point. Okay, I miss it by 1. So I'll do the traditional stand and drool.
All right.
I'll throw a persona and give myself a little bit better chance here.
Oh, no!
Oh, dear God.
Well, I'll spend a fate to try to reduce the extensive lengths of time I'm drooling.
All right.
This is why the throne room is long. So,
it gives you that edge you need to not appear.
Nope.
You do hear, isn't she beautiful?
6 actions of drooling.
Wow, okay.
So I got 3 successes.
That's 4. So two rounds drooling. Unless you want to run down there and grab her.
Ulfkill is the least moved. Still moved, but the least moved.
Remember your betrothed. Oh, yeah. Berglin. Yes.
Yeah. Berglin would look nice in that outfit.
It's like, oh, that's yeah, a nice would. Armor. Oh, Berglin.
Actually, you know, thinking about it, it would be the armor more likely. Yeah. I mean, he's looking at the armor going, oh. Yes. Mother of
well, I mean, it's craftsmanship as well, but I'm not going to make you do double greed test.
Okay, they must be training with the humans to get that mother of pearl. After she gets like a quarter way up the stairs, he's going, okay, they must have been training with the. Oh, he realizes and he bows.
Fliss is just hanging back meanwhile, I guess. Just
We're just going to stand and draw, but we're going to utter something like magnificent.
I think Gurm shoots you like this leer. The procession begins to walk up the steps and you're left behind there a moment.
Exactly.
Luckily, Fandral has all the time in the world to sit and drool because it's going to take a little while for these dwarves to reach a platform.
So I imagine that they go up, eventually dwarves go, oh, yes, bow.
Like the dwarves around the room, like the axe bearers are like, yeah. Some of them are forgetting their duties. And then like they do it afterwards, very awkwardly. But anyway, now that, you know, the initial shock is over, or, you know, given the initial hit of greed, you realize that as a contrast to all this gaudy glory, she has a big, crude necklace on. Outside of the armor, and it is just hung from end to end with these huge goblin ears. Some have painted markings, some have holes in them, some have notches in them, like various tribal markings, which is interesting. If anyone has goblin-wise, you might feel inclined to test that.
I'll try it untested. What the hell?
Sure.
Based on perception?
Yes. It would be like so many of them. It's ob one, so it's obstacle 2.
Wow, now I get the good roll with 2 sixes.
Okay, you see the ears now suddenly, and I mean, the closer she gets, the more you recognize the markings, and it's, you can, how many, you got successes, 4 over 2. You can swear that some of them are like tribal war chief markings. You're pretty sure that these are war chief ears.
If I can get more, I do have 2 sixes I can open up.
Oh, do.
All right. And one of those is a 6.
Oh, cool. Keep rolling.
Okay, so that's 6
successes. Oh, but 1 success. Okay, so 6 successes. You have enough time to, like, squint a little. The closer she gets, you get an estimation of how many they are. And something in the back of your head, you remember these stories about the 66 great chiefs of the North that used to be this horrendous foe that would just never relent, and they were just impossible to get at. They would just dominate the whole, like, it's part of why Brekia was so isolated and they have to use other, you know, materials and stuff. Even before Scoria fell, going north to Brekia was kind of chancy because there were so many strong goblin tribes in that area. These appear to be the tribal war chief's ears of every one of them.
They've been cleaning house.
Now, whether she did it herself or someone was nice enough to get them on a necklace for her, that's, you know, the jury's still out.
Impressive nonetheless.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, you know, she draws up. Gurm is walking along next to her with his little cane, and it's smacking on every step. It's almost like an announcement in itself. Every time it comes closer, it brings you more out of the whole drooling days.
How nice of him.
He didn't mean to. But if this was like a movie, we wouldn't see it at first. Like, we would see Fandral looking at all the ears, and we would just hear it in the background, sort of distantly. And the longer, like, he looks at the ears and he remembers things and stuff, the more clear the knocking becomes, until we see, like, this shot of Gurm drawing closer until he sets down the cane on the platform where the throne is in a final, like, boom. And it's like, yes, now they are here. And now that you're in front of her, like, she has these, her eyes under her like heavy dwarf brows are just these green orbs of like impeccable mountain crystal. Her face, while beautiful, she doesn't look pleased. She doesn't look excited. She doesn't look like she's openly hating anyone here, but you can tell that she's not here on a nice errand, like to bow the knee and be like, hey, let's...
We are not amused.
Let's throw a party. It's not that kind of meeting. Gurm does his own like sort of dwarf bow as best as he can. He's clearly a bit old to be doing extensive bowing and stuff. The princess inclines her head, and she's looking as much at you as she is the throne you're sitting on, if you're sitting.
Yeah.
Gurm says, well, great Prince of the South, I present Princess Fenna.
Here he will rise and extend his hand. It's a joy to meet you, Princess.
Okay. She approaches, clearly sizing you up.
She has to make her own greed roll for power.
Probably, you know, it's
that throne
or something. I don't know. Probably his fine share. And you do that, like the customary, like dwarf hold, grab the handshake, the secret dwarven handshake.
Secret handshake. We've got a super secret one, though, for us Dvergar dwarves.
Oh! Is it very different, or is it? It's not something anyone would see if they saw you do it.
Something in the grip.
All right, that you know. Okay. Oh, it's probably your like test to see if she's really Dvergar, right? Awesome. Okay. And yes, I mean, she knows it.
It's specific pressure on the inner side of the inner part of the wrist.
You don't know what it is. You're not a Dvergar.
It's that secret.
It could be the way they lick their eyebrows.
Slate might know it since he's Dvergar too. But Slate isn't here, scarily enough. She says, it is an unexpected pleasure to find a kinsman on this throne. And as she says this throne, she's not looking at you. She's looking at the throne past you.
It's been many years and a difficult journey to get it back.
I was not aware you held it previously.
My forefathers.
She nods.
My father and his father before him.
She lets go the grip, and she does a little circle around the upper platform to sort of take the room in. She looks back to you and she says, we have a similar errand. I too am here to claim what my forefathers left to me, my heritage, and you are on it.
And we cut to Slate.
Let's do that. Screw it. Let's get Slate into this. So, whoomp, cut away from it, cruelly and horribly, and it's 2 days earlier. And Slate and Ty are walking out of the Scoria like gates toward the north. Slate's dog is in tow. Ty is looking very disturbed. We shouldn't be doing this. Oh. The dog is biting your ankle, as if preventing you from leaving.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop and turn around and look at him.
He's being impossible. Typical, like, puppy.
Oh, he's being a puppy. Okay.
Except that he's much bigger than your usual puppy. Also, you are a dwarf. He almost has your entire calf in his mouth.
He did pack some rolls of gauze and stuff, so he's going to take one out and roll it into a ball and go, hey, you want this? He's going to play ball with him, essentially, to tire him out.
All right. Let's see you make a dog husbandry test.
Can I open that? I'd like to open that.
Yes, that is something that you need to write down and see if you can open it up. To see if you can, like tire him out, get him under control so he's not being a nuisance the entire trip. I think it's based on will. It is.
My will is B5 at the moment.
And the obstacle is going to be 1, so we're going to double that to 2. So you do successes to make sure that dog is not being a complete and utter nuisance.
3 successes.
Yeah, 3 successes.
Oh, cool. Okay, so yeah, you do what comes natural, apparently. You manage to play with him until he's a bit too tired to keep playing. And that means, of course, he's also a little too tired to be running around like a crazy puppy and checking every corner and peeing in places. And
he's just going to follow me then.
Yeah, yeah. It takes an hour, 2 maybe. And then after that, it's like, yeah, I'm following. you are at this time, you've gone into some of the tunnels. That's a question, actually. Do you try to take the obvious underway route toward Breccia, or do you try to take like side tunnels?
I don't know my way around here, so I'm going to try to take the obvious way,
okay.
unless Ty says this is a better way or whatever.
Well, you could consult him. If you do, he'll say, well, there are, of course, places that would be better to quarter if you were a big expedition, but we don't know their numbers. They could be small. They could be large. It's really, what would you prefer? Would you prefer to try orientating yourself? Well, with my help, of course, through the smaller tunnels, or should we just take our chances with the big one? There could be goblins.
It could be goblins in either place. All right, let's go through the small tunnels. Small tunnels. The larger ones are more likely to be populated by unsavory things.
All right, so you take the side stuff, the side tunnels and such. Maybe you keep...
With Ty's help.
Yes, of course. Okay. That would require like an orienteering test.
Ooh, I think I already am opening orienteering.
Okay.
I already have 1 routine test in that.
So to not get lost and to keep the road clear and near through these like winding passages and smaller, you know, way stations and the service routes between them. It's an OB2, which is going to be an OB4. I'll give you an advantage die for having Ty with you because he's going to go, oh, well, too much water or, you know, this won't lead the right way.
What's it based on?
I believe it's perception.
So I get 6 dice.
7. With the
7.
If you succeed, you're not going to have any problems. You're going to orientate your way toward a likely place where you might run into these dwarves. And the odds or the favor is going to be on your side. Element of surprise, if you will. If you don't succeed, you're going to run into something and you're going to be surprised. Cool. 5 successes is a lot of successes.
It looks like Slate getting all our successes.
Well, maybe he'll need them. So what happens is you and Ty take the likely passages. You avoid certain places that like are clearly too dark. They have this smell that you immediately understand. It's like, oh, something lives in there. Something bad. So you don't go that way. And now and again, Ty will like stop you and go, oh, wait. Right. We went that way. And then the underway should be that way. That tunnel.
What would it take for me to be writing this down?
The path?
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, I have paper in my pack.
If you're writing down directions, are you drawing a map or are you writing
maybe
down?
I'm just drawing a. Maybe I'm just drawing a line.
Okay. In that case, you would be learning cartography.
Ooh, another skill to learn.
If you want to make a simple map, well, let's make it OB1. It's not like if you're drawing a line and making some annotations on it, it might be difficult to follow later for other people, but you are going to know, right? So that's a 1, which is doubled to 2. So it counts as a routine test. You can record 1 right away.
No, I don't think Ty's helping me with this one.
No, nope.
66.
Something you're doing while he's like going around in circles and going, where did we come from? Oh, there. 5 successes. Nice. It's way more than you need. You probably make a slightly better map than you thought you could.
Okay.
You're writing down the paces that you've taken to get to the next tunnel, I guess.
Maybe I'm also writing like herbs that grow along the cave walls or something.
Oh yeah, like you're writing down everything. You've reached a good point, like in your map, when Ty's like, shh, hold on. Further ahead. Can you smell that? And if you take like a sniff, you can smell smoke.
Smoke. Okay. Is it smoke or is it?
It smells
campfire
like,
smoke or
it smells like campfire smoke.
Okay.
Wood smoke. Yeah.
I'm going to put my hand on Ty's shoulders. Like, do you think way out here we're bound to meet allies or enemies?
I have no idea. The dwarves are out here, but there could be goblins too, right?
Right. Let's get closer and take a look.
Right. Why don't I stay here with the dog so he doesn't make noises and you can sneak ahead?
Sorry, I trust you, but I don't trust you that much.
But it's not like I'm going to run. I have to keep an eye on the dog.
If he does go, oof, I'm going to put my hand on his muzzle.
There's a probing tongue on the inside of your fingers.
Aw. I guess I'll throw him a snack to keep him quiet, because I did bring some.
All right.
Begrudgingly look at Ty and then just sigh and it's like, okay, if you run, I'll make sure every dwarf in our contingency knows about it.
Yes, 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 I won't run. I have an important duty here to make sure the dog is safe.
You keep him safe or it's your head.
He gives you thumbs up.
I guess I am opening stealth because...
If you don't have it, yes.
Good golly, I'm learning skills today. This is like teach slate day.
You can be just like Ufkel.
So what's the ob?
The obstacle, since you essentially are catching whoever this is off guard, it's going to be an ob 1, which is doubled to 2. So it's still going to be a routine test. It's going to count toward opening stealthy. But you have 4 dice and you need 2 successes.
Dang it. 3 ones. Wow.
You begin to sneak forward, rounding this like tunnel corner. You begin to see like the glare of a fire on the cave wall, or the tunnel wall rather. It's kind of rough, so there's some dispute maybe whether it's a cave or a tunnel. And going down it, you come to what looks like a makeshift camp. There's like a little satchel propped up against a wall. There's a tiny campfire. There's an arbalest, kind of odd-looking arbalest with kind of dark wood and carvings in it next to the fire. You can hear now that you're sort of at the lip of this camp. You can hear the sound of, well, you can hear the sound of someone peeing against a wall.
I'm definitely going to try and sneak back the way I came because there are people here.
And as you turn, you step on one of those annoying little bits of stone and you kick it off into the distance, like smacking against the walls and the floor, and the echo is just, I mean, it's naked rock, so it's like, it's like throwing a vase on the floor. It's that like obvious.
Oh goodness.
So you can hear a, oh shit!
We hear it back in the Scoria Deep.
In the council room.
But the question is it a human oh shit or a dwarven oh shit or an elfin or a goblin? There's so many kinds of defecation involved.
So it's gruff. It's definitely gruff. You know,
dwarven.
Yes. Out of the shadows, around a corner, this broad dwarf with sort of strange segmented dark lacquered armor, sort of chest piece, comes sort of careering, tying up his breeches, fumbling for the axe he has in his at his side. He just skids to a halt by the campfire and like sees that you're a dwarf. He's like, what? Who are you?
Is my back still turned to him or?
I think your back is turned to him. It is turned to him, but you have your head sort of swiveled back so you see what he is, who he is.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn back around because it's impolite to talk to somebody when your back's to them.
You'll have to excuse me. I have my wheelie out. I don't want to turn.
Sort of make a really quick, hurried, sketchy sort of bow and go, my name's Slate. I was looking to get to... He actually, I'm blanking, so he's going to blank. He doesn't want to tell if he's going to Breccia, because that might be interpreted as, I don't know, hostile activity or whatever.
All right,
so he's like, it's like, oh, Scoria, actually, yeah.
While you're saying all this, he's sort of unslung his axe from his belt, and he's standing there not sure what to do. Why don't you give me a falsehood test?
Oh my goodness.
Because you're not.
Oh, I'm definitely lying. I'm definitely lying. I don't have anything close to falsehood.
Well, congratulations. It's a will-based skill.
Let me put it under skills that I'm learning.
Or turning into Ulfkel. The obstacle is going to be 3, which is doubled to 6.
Oh my goodness. I can't.
If you roll a 6, you can always use fate to open it. You also have, I think, 4 persona if you absolutely want to succeed in lying. If you succeed, he's going to believe you. If you don't, he's going to think you're a spy or something.
I want to do 5d6 with obstacle. Well, I'll just do 5d6.
Oh, you have 2 sixes. 4 successes and 2 sixes.
Do I even have enough to pop them?
You have 1 fate.
Not gonna. Don't. I'm gonna save it, so.
Aww.
Do it!
Do it!
Seriously, when are you going to get another chance like this? And you can add the fate to your skills.
Your will, actually.
Yeah, besides, it's persona that keeps you alive, not fate.
All right, fine. I'll pop it.
Hey! You did it! So it still counts as a routine test for opening falsehood.
You do really well. Like, you can see... You can see that his suspicion, his narrow-eyed suspicion, is slowly melting away, and he sort of lowers the axe. And he, well, you ninny, you went past it!
Well, maybe you can help me find my way back.
Well, maybe. I have things I should do, too, you know? Are you here alone?
No, actually, I'm not.
All right. Well, I can always take you to someone who might be able to point you in the right direction or help you get there if it was difficult.
He's gonna holler down the cave for Ty.
All right.
And the dog.
I can hear Ty now. Are you sure?
That is exactly what you hear.
Come on.
You can hear the paw skittering with the claws on the stone before you hear Ty. And then Ty is sort of dragged into the camp cave by a taut line. I forget what you had tied him to, but...
Leather leash of sorts.
The dog has regained a bit of vigor and is, of course, like going through the camp one inch at a time.
What's
like,
this? Ooh, what's this? What's this?
Yes.
Ooh, someone peed here.
Hmm. going into the pack. And the dwarf scout, clearly, he's a scout. He just rushes over to his satchel and sort of grabs it up like, what is this beast?
That's my dog, I think. I think that's what it's called.
And he's sort of trying to defend himself by keeping the dog at a distance with his foot. He's not kicking it. He's just holding him at a distance because the dog is like, oh, new person.
Must lick.
Must sniff crotch.
I'm gonna whistle for him. We have been practicing the cum thing, so if he's got it, he's got it. If he doesn't, he doesn't.
You succeeded with your animal husbandry pretty well, too. So yeah, he comes to your side.
Good boy. Fondles his ears, but one of his ears is about the size of my hand, so.
Like I said, you get a saddle when he gets full grown, and you can ride him into battle.
Yes, I probably can.
The scout, he goes, I'm Honding. Who are you? And he points to Ty, and Ty looks at you.
Nods.
I'm Ty, and he's sort of, adjusting himself.
He's been trying to help us get to Scoria, but I think he overshot a bit.
Roll a die of fate.
A die of fate?
Yes, roll 1d6.
Which one is it? Get evens good, odds bad?
No, it's. I think it's if you roll a 1, something particular is going to happen.
Nope.
No.
2.
Okay. So instead of going for the like, what are you saying? We just came from... He goes, I guess I'm lost. We're from Marl. So yeah, the scout dwarf Honding puts his satchel down and puts his arms in the at his hips, poses overbearingly, and it's like, well, I don't know what Marl's like anymore. We haven't had much contact with you since the fall of Scoria. But I suppose you're dwarves. You're welcome to the fire. And if you absolutely need some help, I can maybe show you to some of my kinsmen and can get you on the right way.
I'm thinking, and this is just internal character stuff, I'm thinking maybe Slate is starting to figure out that trying to go to Breckia by himself is a bad idea.
No.
So he's gonna accept this help because he could not find his way back to the prince if his life depended on it, map or no map. He has no sense of direction.
Well, you would have to use the map to get back, so yeah.
So yeah, I think he's probably starting to have second thoughts, and he's gonna take this dwarf's help to get back to Scoria. And the prince is really angry at him.
Well, I'm just wrapping up my patrol. You can keep up, and we'll get you sorted.
And he picks up all of his stuff and straps everything to his body, and he gets out a lantern and he lights it from the fire, and then he sort of steps over the fire.
Well, what do you do for fun in Marl?
As he's like going into the nearest tunnel.
Me, not particularly much. I haven't had much time for festivities.
Oh, why are you going to Scoria, by the way?
To meet up with... Well, I'll be quite honest with you. To meet up with the prince.
Oh, interesting. Are you related?
No.
I don't know. You have a kind of... Well, excuse my saying, sir. You don't have dirt all over you.
I'm a Curigen.
I figured. Dexter's fingers, and he does the whole, like, ridiculous, like... waving his fingers around like he in front of you.
He actually likes this dwarf, so he's literally going to tell him all of, like, what happened thus far.
I love Slate.
Every single bit of what happened, that they were going to the Goodheart Hold, and he had an argument with his great-great-great-grandfather, and... he was going to Brekkia to try to find out more about his family, and then had second thoughts and was turning around to go back to Scoria, and yeah.
Roll me a die of fate again.
Oh, God. You love Slate, huh? Let's just hope the dice love Slate.
Ooh. Oh, okay. I think it's a one. Six. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to go with one. So maybe here and there, there are moments where Ty looks like he wants to stop you, but it is like he can't quite summon up the courage to, or like the moment is past because you keep just chugging on with the whole your history and how the expedition went and all that. By the time you reach a bigger campsite, Ty is just, you know, he's dragging behind a little and he's looking like really nervous. And if we were privy to the inside of his head, it would be a big, huge no. No, I'm going to be put in the deepest hole and nobody's ever going to dig me out. The prince will never forgive me.
Honding takes you to a abandoned way station, which is guarded by more of these like dwarves with like the odd armor. They seem to be using like lacquered wood instead of leather. It's well lit. They have lots of lanterns and fires. You see some animals, like some beef. You see hens. You see goats. It looks like a military encampment, clearly, like the way it's organized. He, you know, stops you, and he walks up to the sentries, and he's like, rawr, 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 points to you and points further in, and they nod and just look you over, like initially with suspicion, but then once they look you and tie over and see the dog, they're like, well, probably not a threat. And they, you know, wave you past. Honding shows you to what seems like a makeshift canteen where there's, you know, beer, there's water, there's some food. And he just invites you to, like, sit yourselves, and I'll get someone who, who'll be able to get you the right kind of help. I need to make a report.
I bet their beer is not as good as Hoofkill's.
Oh, he's going to sit and ask for some water for his dog.
All right. The dog is met with much suspicion, but nobody's directly hostile.
Given their exposure to humans, they might actually recognize the beast.
They know it's a dog, right? They know it's a dog, but keeping dogs is not a huge like dwarf tradition. So it's more like, oh, strange, it's a dog beast. What do those humans use?
Maybe it tastes like chicken.
Well, they have enough food, but otherwise, yes. Otherwise, they may be sizing it up. Anyway, it doesn't take long for you to like pile some food on some tin plates and get tankard of something. Ty is clearly like drowning his nervousness and dread with food and drink. Like, he's just stuffing himself, which, of course, garners him slight, like, evil eye from the canteen manager, whatever you want to call it, like the quartermaster for the food. It doesn't take too long before this gruff-looking, bald-headed, fork-bearded dwarf to come up to you. He says,
"Are you Slate, Ty?"
"Yes."
Well, you're certainly interesting looking. You say you came from Marl?
A long way from Marl, yes.
My name is Thod. I'm sergeant here. A key, I managed the scouts and the others here. I understand you have some problems getting to Scoria.
Got lost. Turned around.
Uh-huh. How many successes for falsehood did you get again? 6, right?
Yeah, 6.
All right, so Thod sits down like he fills his own tankard. He takes a drag and he looks pointedly at Ty, who's like, he stops meeting his eye and just looks down into his beer and sort of munches. And then he looks to you and says, "Why don't you give me the real story?"
I guess he's going to. I'm already deep in. If these are enemies, I'm deep in enemy territory. Why not dig my hole while I'm at it?
Now, you gave up a good deal, a good bit, to Haunting. And there's no way he's had enough time to, like, give anyone else the full account. Like, he's probably given the sergeant, Thod, enough information to know the broad strokes of your, like, journey to Scoria. But, like, the bit about, like, going there to see the prince, clearly a lie. So you tell him the truth.
Yeah, I'm going to tell him the complete truth.
All right. He sits back and he drinks the rest of his beer and he says,
"Thank you for being honest. That is a good trait for a dwarf. Good and honorable. And your trait is a chirurgeon?"
"Yes."
"We have some hurt men here who could use a good hand."
"I'd be happy to do my best."
"Well, that is good to hear. It's great to hear, in fact. Why don't you show me your tools? I've never seen Marl tools before."
Oh, he's going to... I assume he has his bag on his back. It wasn't taken from him or anything.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, he's going to open it up and take some things out. Just kind of show him.
Okay, so he looks over the tools and he looks over the bag and he sort of brushes some cave dust off the bag and he looks it over and says,
"Fine workmanship. Good leather."
"It's from my sister."
"Good sister."
And that's where we cut back to the throne room where Princess Fenna has just laid down like her intent. I think the last thing she said was, we have a similar mission. I'm also here. Like, I'm here to claim what's owed me by my forefathers, and you're sitting on it, right?"
"I put my hand on the throne. It is magnificent. I can understand its draw."
"I would give you a humor fate, but, you know. It's magnificent." So you don't mention anything about other, like, she says it is not about its craft or its make. It's about what I am owed. Where is Ulfkill, by the way? Are you standing, like, down the corridor somewhere? Like, down the steps?
Yeah,
Or did you and maybe Flint move up so you're also around on the platform?
No, I'm probably still down the steps because it's princely, princessy things going on up there. Not my place.
And that would put Flint at about the same level as Ulfkill because he would have respectfully followed. Well, at least it'll look respectful when he was actually just sitting there drooling. But gave her an essential head start.
Now the acoustics here are probably wonderful. So,
oh, yeah. Maybe Flint is on the next flight, right? You're not on the top platform, but maybe...
Oh, no. Like I said, I think I'm on the same level as Ulfkell.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So no one's actually there to maybe directly chime in or interrupt these two.
No, we'd have to be loud about it.
Sure.
But we could sit there and commiserate with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Look at all this these dwarves weren't... Go ahead.
You were asking an out-of-game question. I was making an in-game comment, so you go first.
Well, I was just thinking that all the dwarves here are wearing that black lacquered armor. Am I right?
Yeah.
So now you make a comment.
So yeah, the viewer is like, oh, but of course... We don't know. The dwarves don't know.
And my comment is, just, do you think they'll duke it out with axes?
Who are you saying this to?
Ulfkell.
Oh, okay, so you're next to each other. I get it. Okay.
Yes.
No, it's, there's other ways of dealing with this.
All right.
Yeah. But isn't he already engaged?
Aye, but he can have a consort, you know.
She doesn't look the consortable type.
Are you trying to open gossip-wise, or what's this about?
No.
He already has rumor-wise.
Oh, right. Yeah. Looking out to the next expert. Psst, the prince is going to marry her.
The diplomacy, you know. Diplomacy. They'll work this out. You know, it's not right for dwarves to fight dwarves.
Fenna she looks briefly to Gurm. And Gurm gives her a sort of little nod, and she looks back to Fandral, and she says, I know you have noble forebears, but those same forebears are mine, and I have primacy. Your father is Vandral, the Iron Girdle, but the Iron Girdle is also my father, and I am your senior.
It's a sister.
Yeah, I guess that means no marriage.
Not necessarily.
At least not unlike Star Wars, we found out before the kiss.
No. I don't think there was going to be any kissing anyway, but, you know, we'll see.
Hey, Fandral can be pretty charming.
True. It depends on how much into Game of Thrones territory we want to get, I guess. Right, I mean, it's a bold statement.
I've heard nothing of you from my father, and I certainly don't remember seeing you before.
So far, anyway, her face has kept a pretty even configuration. You can get the surface of what's going on in her head, but it's never quite clear what she's thinking, what she's intending. Except now. Now, you know, her like regalness fades, and she says, "Of course you haven't. My father, our father, the great Vandral Iron Girdle, took great steps to see my mother, Rigna Proudhagler, dead. He coveted another's dowry, and so my mother was not good enough. It is only by luck and the great help of Gurm here that I survived it all. I don't know your mother, but it would not surprise me if she met a similar fate at some point when he tired of her."
"No, my mother died of consumption after we were fled from Scoria."
Like maybe there's a way for you to ascertain like the verity of this, or ignore it. I don't know.
Yeah,
Todd says rings. Do you mean like clan rings, signet rings?
Sure, especially if he has his father's ring. That's big claim stuff, mojo right there.
Nobody's denying his parentage.
No.
I don't see as this has any bearing on my claim to the throne here. I am my father's designated heir.
"And I dispute that," she says, cold as death.
"So, did we send for his father?"
"Anyway," she says, "I thought you might be unreasonable." She nods to Gurm, and he begins to fiddle about within his garb, his like robes. While he does that, she says, "I don't know what kind of ruler you are, but if you are any honorable one, you would care about your subjects. I have a few of them." And then, of course, Gurm pulls out Slate's satchel and throws it on the floor before the throne.
Bum, bum, bum.
Should we like fade there?
Sure.
Cool.
Cliffhanger part two.
Yeah.
Now, of course, for all we know, Slate's busy doing the gorilla thing in the tunnels, hiding from the...
That's the juicy part. We have no idea if you know, is Slate with them? Is Slate, you know, doing John's thing?
Is Slate even alive?
No, you're a player character. You have plot immunity.
This is Burning Wheel.
You still get plot immunity.
Yeah, but you don't have... I would say you don't have die roller immunity, but you actually may.
You did roll really well. That's good. That's a great falsehood test.
I mean, but plot immunity in that he can't kill you outright. You have to actually, you know, give you a chance to survive.
You're responsible for your own survival, in fact, you know, by keeping your persona point.
Mm-hmm.
But I can hurt you quite a lot. That I can do.
Really?
Let's go to people's beliefs. And if you want to amend something, like, I mean, obviously for next time, something that you can go for immediately next time, you know, think about that. Now that you know, like, oops, I may be trapped among these
northern dwarves, whom I don't know about anything of, or, you know, crap, there's an annoying senior, there's an annoying older sister who wants my throne.
And magnificent must have it shouldn't apply to the prince's sister.
No, he stood and drooled.
Yeah. He drooled the longest. Oh,
I don't
too.
Know. When Slate meets her, she might still be fair game.
That's Fandral's counter. Well, okay. Let's start with Slate. I'll give you a fate for, you know, pursuing what you wanted by finding the dwarves, right? I'll give you a fate for your oath as well. It seems to be part and parcel of restoring your family's honor and place in Skorya Deep. Understanding who they are.
Yep.
That's two fate. For Fandral, well, you've located the Dwarven Company, part of it anyway, so not really by your doing, but I'll give you a fate. let's see about Flint. Not really anything super applicable.
He's kind of in a walking wounded category. That's...
Well, I mean, for next time, you can always write a belief about Fandral and Fenna or something. Because you do have that idea about protecting the prince, right?
Yes. Just never thought I'd be protecting him from his sister.
So you think the worst enemies are not dwarves, but you're so wrong. The dwarves are the ones with greed.
I've come to realize that none of my beliefs actually include an oath of fealty to my prince.
Well, Flint doesn't have that either, and Slate doesn't have it either. So it's
not, that's true too. Yeah,
it's not quite that society. It's more understood that, you know, when the prince he's the prince. Yeah,
I'm the prince's brewer. Yeah, and I wouldn't trust a brewer who'd change sides anyway.
Wow, was that what you were thinking? I wonder if she has a good brewer. Feckless Nogger, you?
No. I would, if I was her, I wouldn't trust a brewer, a trusted brewer to change sides. Because next thing you know, the next beer I drink is my last. Did I open up Poison Wise?
You better not have.
No, I didn't. Oh, well.
Maybe you tried to open poisons?
No. I had to deal with poison, though, but I didn't learn anything from it.
All right, so we didn't actually get into restoring the Opal Breweries except for ordering eggs and stuff?
Nah, I wouldn't even call that as counting either.
No.
It was
I'm good. I'm good.
Talked about chickens.
We didn't have to test anything, so yeah.
And likewise, make sure the fire elf demon's gone. Lots of Sturmendrang and no dust.
I'll give you a fate for that, because you determine the nature of the spirit, right?
Yay!
No Lost Nog recipes yet, but, you know, we'll get to that.
Yep.
Did we have any instincts that got you guys into trouble? The princess did not order Flint to do something stupid.
As long as she doesn't know, I'm not going to offer.
Oh, that's dirty. I may have to put that in my pocket.
You can keep it there.
Like the coin that you fished out of the dryer.
You know, I'll give all of you a humor fate, because I think you deserve it one way or another. I laughed several times anyway to your various...
I laughed until I stopped.
And of course, you're getting embodiment, all of you. That's
yay,
one persona.
Persona.
And then let's go to Workhorse and MVP. And sort of in slightly off-kilter episode, so Workhorse is for the character who has the mundane stuff, having that particular piece of gear to make a scene go, having a particular skills to get the other characters to safety.
Ironically, that's Slate, because Slate's gear led to the cliffhanger.
So what, Slate is the MVP?
Yeah, I see.
In a roundabout way, why not?
You interrupted yourself a couple
right.
times.
So one persona MVP for Slate then. But for Workhorse, do you want to say Slate again, or is another dwarf, you feel another dwarf is eligible? The most relied upon in a given scenario.
What about the prince? Because he's the one that's sitting there, he's on the pointy end of the political sphere.
That's a fair vote. I'd say that.
Yeah.
The workhorse persona for our prince, our illustrious prince. And you know what? I'm super tempted to go give a deeds to Slate, because Slate's bumbling honesty is really, really making life easier for the Brickia dwarves. To no gain for himself.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm going to give a deeds to Slate.
Yay.
That's it for Arta.
Woohoo!
Oh, we were doing a traits vote this time around.
I don't know if we have time for it, but we could do it. We can do it maybe next time after we resolve, like, you know,
sure.
Who should be on the seat and stuff.
And see if we have a dwarven head matching the other.
So anyway, I hope it was fun, even though I, you know, threw in some, stole some of your time with interstitial scenes and stuff.
No problem. Adds flavor.
Cool. That's all I got for today, folks.
Well, in that case, have a good one, and hopefully we'll catch you all next week.
See you guys later.
Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
You're overthinking it way too much. Breccia, B-R-E-C-C-I-A, is a rock composed of broken fragments of minerals or rocks mixed together by a fine-grained matrix.
Yeah.
It's stony. It's stony.
Finland, the country I most adore.
Send all complaints and other feedback at sunnyskypers@zoho.com. That's ZOHO.com or ZOHO.com if you prefer. Or come by the forums, sunnyskypers.freeforums.org. Or yell at us at whatever forum you may come across us on.